We might have some nice MSPC Christmas gifts in order, i.e. professional microphones for you guys.
Dude, I can't wait to get into this house and set up a microphone and never take it down.
It's going
to
be great.
I also can't wait to get into your house and set up my microphone and never take it down.
You could do that. You could right be in it.
It's going to be right where you want it most, right in front of the kitchen sink.
You could do that, though. You could. You could set up in a whole nother room.
Yeah. And then when I'm not there, I'll leave a cardboard cut out of myself.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and hologram, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, Knight of the Night.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Well, well, well. It isn't Michael Scott, you old bastard.
Well, I never thought I'd see your face around these parts, you old bastard.
Well, I did show my face around these parts, you old bastard.
Why? You're some sort of wise guy, huh?
I most certainly am.
Don't!
Oh, hold me.
Okay. Ollie's back.
Everyone.
Hugging monster! No, not the hugging monster! I don't want to die! I don't want to die! I don't want to die!
That is such a good clip.
There's actually a lot more, but we'll move on.
I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, for our conference room later in the episode, we are going to talk about Peacock, the new NBC streaming service, and how The Office is going to move from Netflix over to that. If you didn't know that, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
If you don't know that,
but we've all known that for a long time.
If you're
time.
Listening to this and don't know that, let us know.
What? we're going to do some Would You Rathers.
Yeah.
I am very excited for today's episode. Today, we're talking about Hollis P. Flax, a.k.a. Fanny Smellmore, DJ Jazzy Flax, Princess Nincompoop, Necropolis, some Greek lady with no more brain damage. We're talking about Holly Flax, the love of Michael Scott's life, and I'm so excited.
So we were planning the show, and we made a list of characters we hadn't talked about yet, and the list was a lot longer than I kind of realized. And then I hadn't even added Holly at the end, and I was like, Holly would be such a nice treat, a nice Christmassy treat to talk about. I feel like she brings so much cheer and warmth and all the sorts of things we associate with the holidays to The Office. We might say it's the holidays.
Oh boy. Okay.
January 3, 2011, a day which will live infamously. Holly Partridge Flax, otherwise known as Holly, otherwise known as a living, breathing angel, is engaged to another man. This is freaking me out. Let's switch to the happy video. No. We'll push through. We'll do this.
I love this TV.
Holly Flax, played by the great Amy Ryan, who came up in theater on the stage on Broadway. She's done some incredible projects outside of The Office, like The Wire on HBO.
Haven't heard of it.
She was in that movie Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet a couple of years back. But
Gone Baby Gone, don't you dare forget that one. She's incredible.
Don't forget
in that
about
movie.
Gone Baby Gone. Yeah, Holly's like another one of these people. I mean, we've talked about Wire crossover before with Idris Elba and other people.
Harry Generone.
Yes, Harry J. Rowe, thank you very much. Yes. So, but she's one of these people who's like a serious actor, like a great actor. I mean, you know, maybe even Amy Adams or these other people on the show who pop in and do guest appearances. So Amy Ryan is a very dramatic, fantastic, well-trained actor. And here she is doing comedy, and she's fantastic at it. She's so funny.
I'm reading she was in Birdman, which I don't remember.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
She in Birdman?
She was.
Dang, I love that movie. I need to watch that one again.
I think when Holly comes in, she comes in at such an important point in the show at the end of season four, and she does so much for Michael. I think one thing that we've talked about before, going into this, was that how do we focus on Holly without bringing up Michael every other sentence.
Right.
And it will be difficult because just kind of the way that the show is written.
She's a walking Bechdel test, right?
Yeah.
For this show. Okay. But it's like, you know, she is the love of Michael's life and vice versa. You know, that's their main role on the show.
But she's so responsible for the way that Michael develops and the way that he exits the show. And she kind of is like, she kind of is the cure for Michael. Like all of Michael's worst impulses and stuff, he kind of curbed because of her. And that's the only thing that ever causes him to grow in any sort of way.
Yeah.
Generally speaking,
yeah.
We've done an episode before on Michael's love life. So we've talked about Holly and Michael before. So we are going to try to just get into just focus on her character individually.
That was a two-parter, Michael and love.
So, that's right. That's right. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to that. So that you can hear us repeat a bunch of things that we think about Holly. let's start with who is she? You know, she kind of gets dropped on us like a bomb in a little bit of a way. She shows up in Goodbye Toby, the end of season four, blows Michael away right away with just her quick wit and her ability to get his joke. She's nothing like Toby. Mm-hmm. We see from the start she has a sense of humor.
She not only just blows Michael away, but completely knocks him off balance in the very first meeting, which is he comes in with a bunch of armor on, ready to fight the next AR person. Like he's in a fighting stance, and she just, bam, hits him right the chest, and he's completely disarmed and has no idea what to do with it. With all these feelings.
Which, by the way, her joke is to like basically throw Toby under the bus and say, yeah, he is boring.
As always, Toby is the casualty here.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point. I feel like rewatching Goodbye Toby, Michael is kind of at his most brittle and sort of hateful and spiteful in this moment.
Yeah, he is.
It's hilarious. He's so geared up to give Toby the bruising. He is his cruise director. As bruising for a bruising. But Holly is the one that makes him stop or pull back just a little bit. And she totally throws him off balance. I think the way that they interact is so much that Michael is looking for an improv partner all these years. Mm-hmm. And even when he goes to improv class, he's terrible at it.
Right.
But Holly is the only person that yes ands him, so to speak.
Totally.
Everyone else says no, or they look right at the camera, or they kind of try it. Even when people are trying to be polite, they kind of brush it off. They don't really go along with his joke, but Holly will go along with it. And even when she as a character is smart enough to be like, I don't know, it's just for fun. Like there's a little bit of that to her, but Michael has never had that before. And we get to see it at when she enters the show.
I know we said we were going to compare, like talk about her and Michael so much. So
it's going to happen.
But do you think that Holly was in a way like a Michael at her old at Nashua? Do you think that she would make these jokes and no one would get them, and she'd just keep making them because she gets a kick out of it?
I think yes. But I think the reason that it, like, so with Michael, he's the manager, and so often he's not just making jokes, but he's doing them in very serious moments, or he's doing them in lieu of his actual responsibilities. And I think Holly, as the HR person, probably has a little more room to do that kind of stuff in her office life or in conversation. At the same time, it's like not appropriate for an HR person to be making a lot of jokes all the time. I think we see it in the baby shower episode when Jan wakes up. And she says, hey, where's Astrid? And she says, oh, on a sales call. Wow, more paper.
Yeah.
And then he's like, ah, coffee break.
And I'm just kidding on the coffee break.
And Jan says, that's funny. And looks right at her. So I think Holly does have a bit of that in her personality.
That's a great example. I'd say another great example is Jim being like, Holly is kind of a dork.
Yeah.
You get these like little hints that other people, it's the same thing that we've talked about with Jim and Pam and how the ensemble doesn't think they're as great as we all do as the audience, you know, like that all these people in the ensemble don't really like Holly. Like like Aaron doesn't like Holly. Kevin doesn't like Holly.
I mean, he did at first.
He was totally going to bang Holly at first.
There's a whole separate Kevin Holly moment that's one of my favorites, which is when she comes back in Classy Christmas and she's like, oh, I bought some maple candies on the way back for you guys, but then I ended up eating a bunch in the car here. And Kevin's face just dissolves into complete sadness. And he's so pissed because he's like, did you bring us anything from Nashua? And then he's just crestfallen.
Oh, so just like put out six pieces for everyone? Yeah.
So upset. Anyway, but you're right. I think it's like no one, there's a lot of people there, they're not impressed with Holly, same way that most of the office, just Jim and Pam, not impressed by them, don't really care for them.
What about Kendall, the HR rep for corporate? He doesn't seem to think much of Holly.
No. I think it one another sort of topic that kind of I think is worth mentioning is that like Holly doesn't seem to come across as a very good HR rep at any real point in her tenure on the show.
I think business ethics only, but
yeah. Even then she's like, she's just reading from the binder, and granted the Kendall from corporate is kind of like, don't make a big deal out of this. Mm-hmm. But he does kind of, he's like, I didn't, he gets so angry with her in a way that maybe seems to imply that there were previous instances or something like that.
Right.
You think of the fact that she didn't realize that her and Michael having PDA was making other employees uncomfortable. She hires Todd Packer back pretty much immediately. When Dwight and Jim are pranking each other in Classy Christmas, she comes back and she's, I don't understand. When I left, you guys were best friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't mean to say that she was totally ineffective, but it just seems like there are a handful of instances to make it seem like she's not an amazing HR rep, you know?
Yeah, she might be as good at being an HR rep as Michael is at being a manager.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is to say, she shows up. You know, like it's not hurting the bottom line. And so the people, the upper reps, don't really care that much.
Although at the same time, I remember in I think it's in season 9 when Dwight becomes the manager and he talks about getting rid of Kevin. Mm-hmm. And Pam says, no, every time you've tried to fire anyone, Toby always stops them. And Toby's like, I can't stop anything, Pam. HR is a joke. And then Dwight makes the cake for Toby as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's I think that's fair to say. I initially was like, no, she is really trying to do a good job when she gets there. I mean, it's a new job and she obviously wants people to like her, but she is confronted with this ethics issue right away, like right when she shows up. Not too many episodes after, when Meredith is like, yeah, I'm trading sex for deals here. And she's got to, like, you know, navigate that. And maybe she's nervous and that's why she reads out of the binder, because she doesn't want to act like she knows everyone and have a, you know, like what Michael would do, which is like, let's all sit in a circle and, you know, talk about the worst things we've ever done in our lives. She's just like, I'll play this one by the book.
I mean, can you imagine working like a boring HR job for a paper company where you've been trained on how to deal with the worst case scenarios, and then one presents itself all of a sudden?
Uh-huh. I think it's a very like good point that she does put in effort, that she does seem to be trying to do her best at the job. And I don't mean to undercut that. I also think it's worth mentioning, how can anyone be a good HR rep at the Scranton branch of Dunder Mifflin?
Impossible.
Given Michael steamrolling you and that kind of thing, it's hard to imagine a very successful HR rep at that branch.
Good HR at Scranton means you never would have hired Michael in the first place.
I would not blame Holly for not trying as hard after that business ethics episode where she's trying to speak up about an employee trading sex for corporate deals. And she gets told, like, stop making this more difficult than it needs to be. I'd be like, all right, that's the last time I call you guys. Like,
that's a good point. Like, then maybe she becomes kind of disillusioned after that instant because, you know, why am I trying to do my job?
I would
stand up for what's right. Like, yeah, you know,
I think that's, and you know, I think with Holly too, like, it's a good time to get back to like the heart of the show and like that this is about like working a boring job and trying to stay a creative, imaginative, fun person and not just become dull and cranky and all these things. Like, Holly's a perfect example of somebody who, you know, she works in the most hated position in the office, and yet she is resilient. She's always looking for a way to have fun and to have a laugh. And we do kind of see her give up on her corporate duty so that she can just live her life.
He said I was dull.
I wanted to circle back to where you know, Alex was talking about Kevin and calling Holly out for not bringing enough candy. I love the way that Aaron is the one with fresh eyes when Holly comes back. And, you know, Aaron is so just not impressed by Holly. Oh, I'm waiting for my boss's pretty friend.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Holly. And then later she says, Holly is ruining Michael's life. He thinks she is so special and she's so not. Her personality is like a 3. Her sense of humor is a 2. Her ears are like a 7 and a 4. Add it all up and what do you get? 16. And he treats her like she's a perfect 40. It's nuts.
Perfect 40.
What is the Aaron scale?
Yeah. Oh, I like that the ears are rated separately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another thing that I noticed prepping for this episode is that Holly isn't in that many episodes.
She's not.
But when she's in an episode, she's really in an episode. She is like a generally like a major focal point of the episode. There's only a couple where she's in the background. But for the most part, the show really makes the most of the episodes that she's in, developing her relationship with Michael and kind of setting up their romance and then setting her up, I guess, kind of in opposition to Jan or in comparison to Jan in the baby shower episode. But yeah, it is funny that like when Holly is in the show, she's really in the show.
I mean, you get an actor that caliber, you know, you're going to use him. You got to use him. Mm-hmm. Same with the Will Ferrell arc. It's just they're all about him, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right. I had that same thing where it's like, man, Holly's not in it as much as I thought when I think about Holly. And it's like, she arrives a lot earlier than I always think, which is the end of season 4. And then she's not at all in season 6. She's there for half of season 5 and then comes back in 7. So it's not a huge run.
Well, even in season 5, employee transfer is episode 5. Mm-hmm. And then lecture circuit, she's only kind of alluded to. She doesn't appear directly.
We see her sweater.
Yeah, yes. And then in Company Picnic at the end. But like, that's not nearly as many episodes as you would think for someone who has such a big presence on the show. And I personally love season 7 maybe the most because it has all the characters. It's got Gabe and like all these characters are in it. The ensemble is really realized. But Holly's only in it for, I think it's, she comes in the classic Christmas episode, but she leaves before the search committee and whatnot. She just kind of exits. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she is.
And KB makes 3.
But her presence is really felt. She makes a big impact.
Yeah, and I think the effect that she has, based on just who she is, which is, she's very, like you said, Sean, she's very fun loving. She's very silly, but she's very professional in a way that Michael tries to be, but just isn't. And what she does is she shows Michael that like you can be both of those things. You can be mature and silly, that they're not exclusive, you know.
There's a couple of times that Holly teaches Michael an important lesson, and maybe the first time it doesn't really work out completely, but they go to Cooper's in business ethics and she's like, it's not a family, it's a business. And you know, she's saying that, I think, you know what she did is kind of icky. And
same thing that Ed Truck told Michael. you know, let your friends be your friends. Let your workers be your workers.
There's
like
so much
your friends
food.
Be your friends, your family be your family, and your workers be your workers.
There's also so much seafood on that table at Cooper's. There's like two full lobsters and like a bread bowl, and Holly's eating like a small salad. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Hey, shout out to our listener who wrote in whose family owns Cooper's Seafood in Scranton.
Hey, that's amazing. Right. Yeah, yeah.
We follow you on Instagram.
Yes, sir.
Cooper's Seafood,
Cooper
I mean.
Seafood, yeah.
Yeah. But then the other time is when, and we've mentioned it already, when she hires Todd Packer, when she allows Todd Packer to get hired. And she learns, of course, we see her go into the conference room with Todd, and she's very trusting of Michael. She says, well, your sales speak for themselves, and Michael loves you. So, like, and she just gives him the job, which is totally cool. Totally cool girlfriend move.
She's just trusting Michael. She just puts all
TTGM,
the trust in Michael.
A totally cool girlfriend move.
But she is able to pick up on the fact that everyone hates Todd Packer, which Michael has never picked up on, apparently.
Yes.
I mean, they all tell her pretty directly.
They tell her pretty directly, yes.
Yeah. And his actions start to speak pretty loudly.
She discovers it for herself, and she is the one who explains it to Michael. And of course, he doesn't want to hear it at first, but she explains it in a way that is able to see it works. I mean, is able to sink in, and he's able to see it for himself. And when he flips out at her and says, you know, you're being a real pain in the ass. I'm sorry I called you a pain in the ass. I love you and I'm upset, which is a very touching thing to say, I guess, but
that's a true relationship when you can say that to your significant other of like, you're being a pain in the ass. I love you, and you know I love you.
And
but right
I'm sorry
now,
I called you a pain
just
in
right
the
now,
ass.
You're acting like that. Yeah,
I think that's an important distinction because she teaches it. So Threat Level Midnight is the episode, and she teaches him that he can laugh at himself, that he can, you know, not have to take himself so seriously. Because when he explains it to her, it makes no sense. Well, this is my dream. Really? You've never mentioned it once. 11 years that I could have been working on the Scar Nebulous. And if I don't have this, then what do I have? I have my comedy special. Here I go again. Dot, dot, dot. My book, Somehow I Manage. And she says, I'm real. And that's where that line comes from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A real pain in the ass. Yeah.
And but I think it's important to – like the only other time that's happened is in Koi Pond where Michael tries to teach – or excuse me, Jim tries to teach Michael to laugh at himself. Go ahead. I'm a big stupid goofball. No, you're not. And then Michael goes out and starts and then too far.
Too far.
Great idea, man. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there you go. I mean, that's a – you're absolutely right. She's able to actually do this in a way that's very loving. I don't know if Jim has Michael's best interest at heart or if he just wants the problem to go away when he brings that up. But when Holly brings it up with Michael, she really wants, she thinks that he can figure this out. And she's patient with him. And that's really something. I mean, we've talked before on this show about things being earned and things being believable. And when you consider how many things they got wrong in season 9, and just how perfectly this is done with Michael and Holly, like, I just think that they did such a good job of, and when I say they, the writers and Amy Ryan together did such a good job of creating this character that is the perfect partner for Michael in the end.
Do you initially, did you find her believable?
I would say, yeah, I didn't struggle with that in the show, but I don't know. What do you think?
I thought there was just like, this was initially where I was like, oh, it's a little too, like, she's too on exactly the same as Michael sometimes and then not like him other times. But then as I've gotten older and watched the show more, it has made a lot more sense, and you start to see the effect that she has on Michael even before they're even dating. I mean, we've talked about this before, but when she shows up the first time her and Michael meet each other in Weight Loss, she or sorry, it well, start working together really in weight loss in season five. I mean, he resists a that's what she said joke in front of Holly, much to Jim's surprise, much to like the people around in that moment. And he immediately is like, I'm going to be a better person. If I'm going to be with this person who's as silly as me, I've found that out. I have to be a little bit better. And that begins what I would say over the entire course of season five, which is Michael going from a boy to a man, basically, to where in Company Picnic, when they have that conversation, when they're sitting out in the leaves, like to me, that conversation that they have is the absolute apex of Michael. Like that's the apex of Michael's character to me. That's when he finally flips the switch and becomes, you know, a fully functioning adult, basically.
Sure.
There,
I buy that.
He does it as well in Goodbye Toby on the Ferris wheel with Holly. But it is interesting that it repeats in Weight Loss the next episode. And Jim is there to turn to him and say, really?
Yeah.
Although we have to remember that Michael doesn't do it every time. I'm thinking of Crime Aid.
No.
When he says, it squeaks when you bang it. That's what she said.
he gets comfortable with Holly. And then he's like, okay, now I can do that again, which is such a beautiful thing about their relationship. I just love, I mean, we heard in the drop at the beginning how silly they are together. Like, they're Amy so Ryan does silly. Such a good job of selling that silliness and their voices that they do. It's just delightful. I mean, it's the DNA for their whole relationship is that Yoda impression. I mean, like I said, she knocks Michael off balance by attacking Toby. And Michael doesn't know what to do. And then she does the Yoda thing. And Michael's done. Michael's just absolutely, it's over for him. He's all in that moment. Which again, she even has to help him be like, Michael, it's not love yet. Like she even has to be aware of that.
Yeah. I had five boyfriends last year too.
The last 10 years I've dated almost four women.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said. I mean, you talk about being believable, the way they come together and fall for each other really early on and so quickly, I think is worth pointing out that it happens so fast. But I think the show does a really good job of kind of checking that with the fact that David separates them, so to speak, by moving Holly back to Nashua. And then Holly tries to make, you know, kind of that decision where she's like, we have to break up. It's not going to work. And Michael is, you know, his fingernails, he has to be, it's like he's holding on to it for dear life, that relationship. I'll go back to Jan. I hate Jan. but the all the different hurdles that get placed in their way, I think kind of help give it space and make it feel more believable. And I think also there's something really funny about the way that Holly deals with all of Michael's grand romantic gestures, or maybe they're not gestures, but they're just phrases. Like when in Classy Christmas, when she comes back and Michael's like, and later when we tell our kids, and everyone in the office groans. You know?
Well, he does that. I mean, he does that in Ultimatum too.
Yeah.
When they have the third date before the sex that leads to the crime aid, Michael bringing up them having sex is so, he just absolutely fumbles it. He just totally messes it up. And to eventually just say, and they're like, do you think we'll have sex tonight? Like that openly and nakedly on their third date. And she just says, hell yeah. And like, it's this, and Michael is completely head over heels.
Doesn't even know what to do.
Accepts Michael. Yeah. And it's like, How many relationships has Michael ruined by saying one thing like that before? Countless.
Or like when you say I love you, like, oh, I love that girl. Or do you mean like you love me, you know?
Yeah.
That same sort of thing. And it plays out in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So it is amazing how so many of those moments other people would have just left. Like Carol Stills after the photoshopped Christmas card. Yes. You know?
Like all the women Michael's dated, Holly has dozens of opportunities to pull the lever before they actually start dating. And she soldiers through all of them.
Eject.
Yeah, well, that is interesting too. Like, you know, Holly having more experience with dating. Like, it seems like, I guess like my assumption is like that guys fall in love with her really easily because she is, you know, can joke around and is really cute and, you know, is
and that really ass open. Refuses to quit.
And that ass refuses to quit.
Jim into the bathroom.
But I think that that's, I think, yeah, that's,
I thought you had to pee.
I think that that's interesting that, like, you know, she has way more dating experience than Michael. We see it brought up a few times, especially when she's moving back to Nashua. And she's kind of like, it's no big deal. We're just breaking up. And he's freaking out. And she tries to make it work with AJ. And it's not really working out. I mean, I think about, like, Holly. I'm just rambling here. I think about, like, the way that Holly, when she finds out that her parents are both suffering from Alzheimer's or just, you know, dementia, old age, it's not really clear. And she feels this sense of need to go back to Colorado. Like, is it her family and her friends there, like, that are her silly, like, that, those are the, you know, those are the silly people in her life. And she went off to the East Coast to work in business, and everyone's super serious, and she's trying to look for a partner. And then she finds this weird guy who reminds her of her funny family and friends back home. I guess that's not really a question.
It's okay.
I mean,
it's okay.
But that's not really the backstory that we get, right? She never says, you remind me of, like, home or anything like that. And we know that Holly just bounces around from Nashua to Scranton to, you know, and she's had all these boyfriends and stuff like that. Like, is that, maybe that's her backstory. Like, I mean, someone like Amy Ryan, certainly a great actress like that would try to build a backstory for her.
Yeah. Well, they give her concerns about her parents' health, you know, I mean, she's kind of willing to drop it all for that and want to be closer to home. But it's not an excuse to get out of a relationship with Michael. She wants Michael to come with, you know, and that mm-hmm. really is who she is. She's like, I believe in this relationship with you. I also love my parents and I want to be there to take care of them as they grow older. Something that is a selfless act, which Michael is learning how to do this entire time he's with Holly, is learn how to be selfless. And that's why I brought that scene up in Company Picnic, because that's the first time there's that really pregnant pause when they're kind of looking at each other in that scene, right? And you'd think in any other time, this is where Michael would blurt something out, or he would make a scene, or he would tearfully profess his love to Holly and break down. And he doesn't. He doesn't say anything. All he says is, well, we have a lot of great material for next year. And Holly says, I can't wait. And that's when he gets the talking head of, like, you know, we're just going to be one of those couples. It's going to take time. You know, I'll have to be patient. And we've, at no point in all five seasons have we seen Michael be patient or even say the word patient. He's not. And it just is this, Holly's influence on him is just, it's so great. It's really touching to watch. Like, I keep coming back to it, and it's like a casino level moment for me watching them get together.
I think that you bring up a great point, that Company Picnic moment between them when she's dating AJ, and then they share this kind of special little moment when they're eating strawberries and they're talking about next year. They're talking about the future. And I think that Holly is feeling it too in that moment. Mm. Right?
Tough same crowd. Like, well, we wrote this specifically for this crowd.
Yeah.
For this audience.
She has a look in her eyes when she says, like, I can't wait to see what we come up with next year.
Yeah.
That is like, she missed him. And she misses this. And
yeah. Sean, you were talking about, like, her family and, like, them in Colorado. And there is a time when she's on the phone. So it's in Goodbye, Michael. And she's on the phone. Michael gets nervous about making the movie. He's like, I can't do it. And he has to hear her voice. So he calls her. And, you know, they have that, you know, oh,
you mean this?
I'll pay the rent, you know. And she says, Mom, it's a joke. My mom is looking at me funny. Like, she says that to Michael on the phone. And so I think, like, they've kind of found the person that has, there's like a tune to their own frequency a little bit, you know. And then I think, too, like, there are a couple lines that I found where in Garage Sale, when she begins to say, Michael, I need to move to Colorado and I think we should go. And so this is why I wanted to, you know, you're my fam. Or she starts to propose and Michael says, nope, 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 not like this. And he runs out of the room.
Yeah.
And then later Holly tries to say, Michael, I'm sorry about that. You're my family now. I don't need to go back to Colorado. And then as an echo to that in Goodbye, Michael, when Michael is about to leave everyone without telling, he says, I got almost everyone. So Holly's my family now. You know, she says she's my family. The babies that I make with her will be my children. The people that you work with are just, when you get down to it, your very best friends. They say on your deathbed, you never wish you spent more time at the office, but I will. Got to be a lot better than a deathbed. I actually don't understand deathbeds. Who would buy that? But I think Michael at the end has embraced Holly as his family. She's his family, not the staff of Dunder Mifflin.
Yes.
And that's what allows him to move on.
Yeah. And again, this whole time, I mean, I feel for Holly because she's getting transferred back and forth, you know, like she's not really able to put roots down anywhere. And the fact that she can do that with Michael just says a lot about her and her kind of ability to think who's actually a good match for her. And like you said, I'm sure there's no shortage of guys outside of the Oscar's yoga instructor who would like to date Holly. he never calls her back. Mm-hmm. And then Michael rips up those Counting Crows tickets. Yeah, yeah. Such a funny moment. They're like, what are you doing?
He's so dumb. he thinks he's so smart.
I know. It's this big gesture. And he's like, it's another movie moment where he's like ripping them up. And it's like, well, you could have just gone with her. Whatever. but I don't know. He cuts off her sleeve. He vandalizes the Woody doll through it all. She stays focused. Like in that classy Christmas scene, when Michael still finds out that she's with AJ, and he's completely distraught. I mean, she's clearly already been wrestling with that, right? By the time she gets back, and it's only a couple episodes later in the ultimatum where she's, you know, calls it off with AJ. That was never going to be. She had already been writing that letter to Michael while she was dating AJ, right? That they find in Lecture Circuit. There's a specific hug that they have. This is at the end of Baby Shower after Jan leaves, and it's like it's really a beautiful moment. And like I said, that one and then this moment where they hug, I would put up there with Casino as one of the best romantic moments on the show. The Jim and Pam's kiss. Nothing's probably ever going to top that, but this one's close because the hug at the end of Baby Shower when Jan finally leaves and Michael stops pretending to be mean, and it's like, all the negative energy in Michael's life has left, and all that's left before him is Holly. And he just slowly, pretty awkwardly, hugs her, and you see her accept it. And it's like, boom, everything's right again. And that's the beginning of Michael leaving, you know, Dunder Mifflin.
So she says, he's still going to be mean to me. And then he hugs her. And then the camera goes in really tight, like on her face. And you just see her eyes, and the way that she asks her eyes is really amazing.
And then they pull out, and Michael just goes like, "So you want a date?"
Yeah.
And there's a directness which how they talk to each other that's really special, and I don't know, it's just that whole arc is just really sweet.
They're so, like, there are times when they're together they can be so open and honest with each other. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have to sell it just in case. I don't have it in case. Do you have it in case? No.
Oh, here's this one. I got this clip just because of Jim's aw. He does the most sarcastic aw I've ever heard is this moment in Classic Christmas when they're walking back to Holly's desk.
I show you to your desk.
Watch out for my guns. They're both loaded.
What kind of guns do you have? Bee shooter?
Aw. Oh my God. Bee shooter? It's so bad. It's like, because before that, they're doing like the terrible, like, gay voice, and Oscar's just makes that face, and then they switch to that voice, and Oscar turns back around like, what the fuck?
There's the, and speaking of
they pretty much make it intentional to show almost everyone in the office while they're walking back, and everyone is just like, what the fuck are they talking about? Like, this is crazy. But neither of them care. It's like Michael doesn't care what anyone thinks about him, and it's beautiful. Yeah.
That reminds me, speaking of Oscar, there's a moment, I think it's in Goodbye. No, I think it's in It's either in Goodbye Toby or Weight Loss. Probably Goodbye Toby. But Holly is talking to, I think it's Kevin. I think she's meeting Kevin for the first time. And Michael is around her and he says, he's talking about making her a mix. How long is your commute? And she's like, and he says, I'll make you a mix CD. Do you have a CD player in your car? And the way that Oscar turns over his shoulder and gives her like this skeptical look, like, what are you doing?
Boy.
And of course, well, you know, this, they have four kids. They have four kids together later. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
I
have to pause. I have to go. I'll be right back.
Do you want me to keep going? I just have more moments.
Yeah, let's go. We can keep doing moments. I have some more moments as well.
In the baby shower episode, when Michael goes back to give Holly the pep talk about why he's being mean to her, he just sits on an open trash can. He just decides to sit on a trash can that doesn't have a lid, and he just kind of settles into it and is talking to her about why he's going to be so mean to her. And he's like, I will be treating Ryan the same way. She says, of course.
I forgot that. That's settles into a trash can.
I was just going to talk to Holly about her hygiene. She smells like old tomatoes and dirt.
we haven't really talked about the search yet. And I mean, that's in that one, Michael's, I mean, she's basically like saying no to Michael, right? In the search of saying like, she doesn't want to be involved with a coworker again. I mean, here she is, HR rep, and she's, all that we've seen is her dating coworkers, people that work with her, which you probably shouldn't do as an HR rep. But of course she's able to track Michael down and show her intuitive nature. It's this just really direct example of how much she knows Michael, but really more importantly, how much she knows people. Because I think she does know people really well, and she's obviously able to connect with them.
Well, and you pit the in the search, you know, you when they go out to look for Michael, I think they do a really good job of picking the three people that are closest to Michael: Dwight, Holly, and whoever is the receptionist, who's, you know, working very closely with him all the time. Like, it would have been Pam in the early seasons, but it's Aaron in this case. Mm-hmm. And out of all three of those people, you know, Holly is the one who is able to kind of naturally figure out where he wants to go. Are the egg rolls really that big? You know,
when Dwight realizes what's happening, that's great. And he's like, oh, we're just going to be following Holly.
You think he wouldn't walk by that bakery just for the smell?
I have a couple other before we move on here. Two other things I want to say about Holly. One thing I hadn't noticed before, but when we first meet her in season four, when Dwight's trying to put a raccoon in her car, I hadn't noticed she's driving a Toyota Solara convertible, which is a very comparable kind of mid-level convertible to the Sebring. Like, they're they're a perfect match based on the cars they've chosen.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, have you ever heard of a Solara?
Never would have picked up on that.
Exactly. It's the Toyota's Sebring, essentially, is what it is. And a deleted scene from Todd Packer, Holly mentions that she has a blind friend named Lois who does not get along with Michael. I gotta think blind guy McSqueezy is involved in that one.
Oh no. Oh my god.
It's like, I just picturing Holly like being like, oh, this is my friend Lois, she's blind, and Micah being like, oh, I also have a blind friend. Just
did you fall into a pit of acid? Eyes first.
Anyway, anything else about Holly?
I think one thing that the show didn't really do is in the deleted scene, there's from Goodbye Toby, Meredith is talking about how she doesn't like Holly's blonde hair, and that's how Dwight recruits her to be in that hazing prank.
Yeah.
With the raccoon.
Yeah.
And then later in the Todd Packer episode, when they're all kind of confronting Holly about why she hired Todd Packer and to tell her that he's kind of a bad guy, Meredith says, don't what's up us. You think you're so cute with your pretty blonde hair. And Jimmy's like, whoa, pull it back. the last thing I had about Holly was, you talked about the Bechdel test, which is whether or not two female characters speak
only to each other, and they don't talk about another male character, right?
That's or whatever they're talking about. Like, nothing they do has to do with the male character.
Right.
This is the clearest example I found. It's from Holly and Phyllis in the garage sale episode. And Holly says, "This is your mom's old stuff?" Phyllis, "Yeah, mostly." Holly, "How's she doing?" Phyllis, "It didn't go down so easy, but she's made some friends, and it's already better than it was." Holly, "How do you know when it's time?" Phyllis, I don't know if you ever know, and if you wait for the day when your parent comes to you and says, "I can't take care of myself anymore," it's never going to happen. Mm. "I have a box of bras under the table if you're interested." Holly, "Let me see."
I can't imagine those bras, fam.
No, that's a... You'd think Meredith would have a box of bras to peruse through.
Oh, wow. My gosh. That is very touching. I mean, it's almost a storyline that I wish was explored a little more. Like, it's really... Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of unique, you know?
It is. It really is. And I think that's... obviously, Holly and Michael's wedding is the movie we never got. Right.
Unknown.
Yeah. And I'm honestly okay with it, because it does have this fairy tale thing where Michael and Holly ride off together, you know, and they're not heard from again. But until you see Michael at the very end, and they have four kids and all those things Michael's been talking about all series. He wants the white picket fence. He wants the tickle fights. He gets that all with Holly.
And the ketchup fights.
The ketchup
fights. Yeah.
And, I love this woman.
And go cocktail party till now. I mean, everything comes true for Michael. And so I'm okay not seeing it, because it is a fairy tale, you know, that Michael gets to live out. And it's just a little treat for us.
Mm.
And Holly is a treat for us all. She's a wonderful character. She's
such a sweet treat.
She brings such good energy.
I wouldn't be surprised if she baked at a professional level.
She's got, I know.
There it is.
Boom.
Hollis P. Flax. Played by Amy Ryan. We love you so much. It's time for a little conference room. 5 minutes.
Okay. 20 minutes. Conference room. Everybody's in there.
20 minutes?
Dad?
No, that's the one with that's the one from the injury with the Dwight's dad.
Okay, for conference room this week, I wanted to talk about an email I got just a few short hours ago. From Peacock about The Office going to Peacock, and it is in the form as an employee, or excuse me, as an email from David Wallace to all employees, Peacock to become the streaming home of The Office. Here's what it says: "Colleagues, it is with great pride that I announce that Peacock will be streaming the documentary footage that was shot at Dunder Mifflin Scranton between 2005 and 2013. We're very excited about our collaboration with Peacock, and we wanted to give all employees a summary of what Peacock will stream starting January 1st, 2021. Every episode, 201 total of The Office, super fan episodes that include never-before-seen footage and deleted scenes and extended cuts of the original series, starting with season 3, with more coming in March, playlists to include to chronicle pranks featuring Jim Halpert, Dwight K. Schrute, Best Office Romances featuring Jim Halpert, Pam Beasley, and Office Words of Wisdom featuring formal regional manager Michael Scott."
That would make doing this show so much easier.
And the last piece is The Office Zen, a 24/7 channel devoted to the sights and sounds of The Office for anyone working at home. We look forward to a continued success with Peacock, and to steal a phrase from our feathered friends, welcome to the flock. Sincerely, David Wallace. This is CEO, Dunder Mifflin Paper Company, Inc.
Wow, well done. Good job, that NBC. Is awesome. Good job,
that's
NBC.
Awesome. That actually, I mean, yeah, they, if they're going to put bonus content up, if they're going to make playlists, like, that could be really cool. They're going to play commercials, right?
I don't know.
I think it's a Hulu situation. Free. It's a Hulu situation, yeah. Right? But you can pay premium to get the ads out.
I'm not sure entirely. I think I got that email because I looked into Peacock for something else, or I signed up for Peacock for something else. Like, I have it on my PlayStation right now. But they it's kind of interesting because you can do channels. Like, they'll just do a channel.
Right.
They're just running SNL all day, like old SNLs or whatever. So I think it is kind of interesting that because of it going back to NBC, they're going to do a lot of things with that footage and with that IP, like making extended versions of episodes that are kind of on the DVDs, which will be fine. I mean, I think I don't know how much it is for Peacock. I guess we should look that up. But but I think that's the kind of stuff that will make it worthwhile to follow The Office to another streaming service, is to have actual additional content. That's better than it going to, let's say, like HBO, where they wouldn't have deleted scenes, what have you, built in. It would just be going to literally another streaming service. I think.
It would. It would be amazing. Like, streaming services don't give you what a DVD gives you. The commentary, the deleted scenes, the bloopers, the bonus content is not available on Netflix. And if Peacock's going to provide that, that would be...
I'm intrigued by this idea of the Office Zen sights and sounds. I wonder if that's like all footage shots of...
People shredding things.
Yeah, just people sitting around. Like, do they have all this footage? Just let them do it. Like, I wonder what it is.
See, that's what I wanted.
It's just B-roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be falling asleep to that. Yeah. Oh, big time.
All our office sleepers out there, everyone who falls asleep to The Office.
Drooling at this idea.
Oh.
That's great. That's going to be cool. Well,
it's making me sleepy right now. Just thinking
I'll say
about
this.
It.
It sounds like that was... They found a way to just send that to Office people, or is that like Peacock's letter to?
It went to everyone who has Peacock, probably.
See, that says a lot right there that they're leading with the Office.
They know.
I mean, they know
They know,
and it's gonna.
This is one of the bigger things that NBC has in their stable as far as own properties go. You know.
Oh, completely. And it sounds like they're doing it right. I mean, it sounds like if you can offer what Netflix can't, people are gonna pay. They'll make the switch. I mean, you certainly
lose the ease and convenience of using Netflix, which I think for a lot of us is pretty subconscious, you know, to just like turn on Netflix or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at least you're giving some incentives and some new stuff. If there's stuff we haven't seen before, then amazing.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we want to see. And I think you can watch deleted scenes on YouTube and you can see how popular that stuff is too. So
2 weeks, guys.
Crazy.
Whoa.
Come on. 2 weeks. Right now we're Michael rocking around the office with whiskey. That's what we're doing in our last days with Netflix here.
Hey, that is a dangerous game, friendo.
Well, thanks for that, Edwin. Much appreciated. That's great. They did it as David Wallace. Also, good move. Glad he's still on his feet there at Dunder Mifflin. All right, we're going to end the show here. We're not going to do trivia this time, just because we do trivia every time. But we are going to end the show with some Office Would You Rathers. Office Would You Rathers. And these are all courtesy from Lucy, who sent these in. We might have done these similar ones before, but we'll just keep going.
Whatever.
They're always fun. Yeah.
Whatever. Okay.
You haven't done them in a while. Yeah. I'm sure they'll be great.
Whatever. Question one, who would you rather have to live with? Michael for a month or Creed for a month?
Creed, better drugs.
Also depends on the time of year, because Creed lives outside. I would much rather do that in the summer.
I would love to just smoke weed and jam with Creed. That would be amazing. And throw things into the quarry.
I would love to do that. I could do that for a month, sure.
I think Michael would be a more manageable roommate than Creed. I think Creed would want to like play music really loud at odd hours and play his guitar walking around and stuff. I think Michael would be a little bit more manageable.
And you might see Johnny Depp.
Weird guest sleeping on the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You might get a glimpse of Johnny Depp if you're at his condo. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan. If you had to be transferred to any branch of Dunder Mifflin, Lucy says, would you transfer to Nashua or Utica? But I'll open that up. Any branch. We don't know the other ones.
Utica. In your face.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll tell you, Utica. The view at Stanford looked real nice. Right on the water.
The guy from Buffalo and Company Picnic says, we're the best branch of the company.
Yeah, I don't want to work with that guy.
Yeah. That guy's so exasperated.
Brian Stack.
Yeah.
The best branch of the company. He's a writer, right?
Yeah, he's a writer and performer. He's on Conan for a long time. He's in a lot of old Conan sketches, that actor. Parks and Rec. He's that guy if you see him.
Yeah.
Like if you know who we're talking about.
Yeah. I guess.
I don't know. What would you say?
I you know what? I have a friend who recently moved to Buffalo and she says it's a real diamond in the rough and she really likes it there. So I'll say Buffalo. Also, it'd be fun to be a Bills fan. It seems like it's a lot of fun to be a Bills fan.
I mean, right now.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're good or bad. You're still jumping into tables.
I got to say, I mean, like, I'm just... the Scranton branch seems like the best branch. Like, I know that if you had to transfer... I know the question is if you had to transfer to another one. But, like, all the other ones are, like, Utica looks like a terrible place to work. It's all really gray, and there don't seem to be any windows or any life in that office. And Nashua seems to be exactly the same way. Stanford's okay because it's got the view of the ocean, but I don't like Call of Duty. And so I got to say, like, I guess it may be Buffalo since we've never been there, but.
All right.
Can I take corporate in New York?
Yeah, corporate. There you go.
Oh yeah, there we go. But the way that the Scranton branch is laid out, like just like geographically, like is so much more appealing than any of those other places. Like when we walk into those mm-hmm. offices, they're so ugly and dull.
And
they're very gray.
Slow-moving.
Scranton is like kind of has that warmth to it.
Sean said they were dull.
It's got to be the southernmost Thunder Mifflin branch. Yeah. Mm. Anyway,
so that's Southern hospitality
or Saber HQ. Maybe Saber HQ. There.
Yeah, I'm going to Tallahassee. All right. If you could attend one office wedding, would you rather attend Dwight and Angela's, Jim and Pam's, Michael and Holly's, or Phyllis and Bob's?
I mean, I would say Michael and Holly's for the sake of it being like for the sake of getting to see it. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jim and Pam's would have been pretty fun. The dance party in the room, being part of the Niagara festivities.
Jim and Pam's. Yeah. Jim, like you want to go to the wedding where you're just like, this is a done deal. This wedding's going to be great. I'm going to get drunk.
Meredith's smoking a cigar outside.
Yeah. Like that seems like the wedding. Whereas all those other weddings, you're kind of like, what are we getting into with mm-hmm. this wedding?
I'd go to Dwight and Angela's myself.
That'd be fun. You'd have to carry a bale of hay, but you know.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and my car would probably be ruined from Moe's trying to jump it or run across it. Yeah. But at the same time, I think it's I like weddings that you don't have to travel too much for. Get an Airbnb out there. It's a nice place. Everyone's getting along at that point. And you get to
Would
see
you have
Michael.
To Airbnb or could you stay in the Irrigation Nighttime or America room?
I assume they're all booked with their family, but if there's one open, I'll take anyone. Yeah. I'm fine with that. I'll pitch a tent out on the
We were all the beach. It's a cow shower.
Yeah. I'll sleep in the beats. All right. Question four. Who would you rather have as a roommate? Now this is not like the first one of living for a month. This is Who would you rather have
roommate.
As your roommate? Season 9 Andy?
Ugh.
Or Kelly?
Kelly.
Yeah.
Season 9 Andy.
He's not there. He's on a boat.
I just want to murder him.
Okay, now He's Lucy also added Meredith person. As another option.
Ooh. Kelly, definitely.
Out of those three,
Kelly.
You're still Kelly.
I think Kelly. Meredith is shown to be kind of a hoarder. This looks like Katrina.
Yeah. reminds me
I
of
think
Katrina.
Season 9 Andy.
You always just leave your door unlocked in a jar?
I think Season 9 Andy is vain, so vain about his, you know, his auditions and his photo shoots and whatnot. I think Kelly would be just fine as a roommate.
Fame of any kind. Yeah. I could get into some trashy TV shows with Kelly. That'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some celebrity gossip.
Yeah.
Ryan and I already watch a lot of reality TV around here. So that's, that's totally fine.
Great. All right. We're all going Kelly. Sweet. All right. Last question here. If you had to listen to one of these on loop for an hour, would you rather listen to Lazy Scranton or Goodbye Toby?
Ooh.
Goodbye, Toby.
Ooh, I'd go Lazy Scranton.
I'm taking Lazy Scranton as well.
Goodbye, Toby.
Toby's
going away.
Listen to that over and over.
Yeah.
Toby.
Yeah. The music is just better in Lazy Scranton a little bit. Instead of, you know, Daryl's backing band and Michael's terrible singing, you get
I love it, though. Terrible rapping. So passionate.
Yeah, it is. It's true. I would do Lazy Scranton because I could take that hour and just memorize it and be able to play that card whenever I needed it.
You would never forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why, when I'd have to play that card. If we, whenever we do bar trivia again for The Office, guys, that might come in handy. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the next time we do that together, how powerful we'll be?
Wow. I don't know. I don't know if I'll do any better.
It'll be the same thing, which is Edwin just carries us across the goal line every question. Yeah. And,
My memory is not getting any better. I thought I would become an expert on The Office.
It's gotten worse,
man. I think I'm getting worse at it.
Me too. Me too. Yarn.
Which is so funny. I guess that's what makes this, I guess that's what fuels this show to keep going. If we knew everything about it, maybe we'd be done.
A little too much of the cannabis Northern Lights indica.
You did that too. I think that just about wraps it up for this episode, all about Holly Flax. Please hit us up. I know we didn't do trivia today, but you can send us trivia. Email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. Send us the questions and the answers. I'll recite the trivia for the guys. Give us a phone call, 503-694-9314. Leave us a message. We love to do voicemail episodes and play them on the show. Hit us up on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Join us and support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. It's $5 a month. You can become a Scott's Tot. We do an extra episode every month where we just do mailbag episodes for our Patreon subscribers. So it's just you and us hanging out. And we try to make a donation to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund every month as well. So join us on Patreon, please. And thank you to all our Patreon subscribers for supporting the show.
Our donations have been getting higher and higher every month. I want that to keep going. It's great. Just keep it on moving up.
Yeah. We have costs that for running the show, hosting the website, our equipment that we use, things like that. So it's extremely important. Our Patreon subscribers are extremely important. I don't know if we'd still be here doing this if it weren't for you guys. So thank you.
And we should have our new Patreon episode dropping next week at some point.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have a new Patreon episode for December. So go on and join. If you join now, you can still get some questions in before the weekend and be a part of that episode. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
Thank you, as always, for listening, for hanging out with us for a little bit. We thank you. We thank you. We thank you. You are our dream makers. Take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Hippity poppy, give me the song.
Yes, sir.
I'm MC Max Scott, and I am hot. She's DJ Chazzy Flax, and she is the best. All the sucker branches can suck off that.
Wicka, 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 what?
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.